Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at Ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, the assistant editor of the Daily Mirror in Darren Lewis, and TalkSport's football correspondent, Alex Crook, as Liverpool do a cup double.
The vanquished have departed, leaving only one to take this famous walk up the Wembley steps, their ribbons adorning the oldest trophy in the game. And those ribbons are red. Jurgen Klopp rewriting history, one piece of silverware at a time.
So much to get into with the boys. Does the boy Crook really now think that West Ham can't hold Manchester City? Another beep beep reverse incoming. Problems mounting up for Chelsea. VAR-cicle at Goodison Park. And Leeds leave it late to give themselves a prayer, probably read by Mother Teresa. It's the best review of all the weekend's action. It's the Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Well, what a weekend it was. Not only in the Premier League, but the FA Cup final as well. Congratulations, Darren. Darren sat here last week. He said to us, Crook, it's not over. It's not over. It's not over. And it's not over, is it, Darren?
No, it's not over. I thought at one stage on Sunday afternoon that it was going to be a perfect weekend for Liverpool when West Ham went 2-0 up and City couldn't find a reply. But, you know, the point will do. And for all of us, regardless of what team you support, or if you're a neutral, the fact is that we do want the whole thing to go to the final day. We don't like dead rubbers. We like the excitement to go all the way to the wire. That's what's going to happen now.
Yeah, it certainly is. I think it's going to go to the final day of the season, no matter what you're fighting. If you're fighting for a top four place, if you're fighting to stay in the Premier League, there was so much action this weekend. Of course, that FA Cup final as well. I think all three of us were at the FA Cup final at the weekend, and it was a brilliant event, wasn't it? I thought the FA did a very good job of making a spectacle of the 150th year of the grand old competition. Crook, you were behind the goal. Away to my left, I was commentating high up on the gantry, but you were down away to my left, behind the Liverpool fans. You were right in the thick of it. Have you managed to get all the smoke out of your jacket?
Do you know what? That was absolutely incredible. It was like bonfire night behind me. There were sparklers, there were red flares being thrown onto the pitch. It got a bit dicey at one stage, but I actually spent a lot of the penalty shootout filming the Liverpool fans, so I didn't actually see Sadio Mane's spot kick. I'm told it was a very good save because I was filming the Liverpool fans believing this would be their moment of glory. Wanted to capture that reaction, obviously captured in the end their agony. I was filming when Tsimikas, the unlikely penalty shootout hero, told me after the game it was the first time he'd ever taken a spot kick. When that spot kick went in, I saw the unbridled joy. And it warmed the heart, actually, because the FA Cup, I think, takes a bit of a kicking still, and I don't understand it, because if you look at the teams who win it, historically, it is one of the big clubs in the Premier League, and I saw what it meant to those Liverpool supporters, and you're dead right, the day was fantastic, the weekend was fantastic, 50,000 nearly for the Women's FA Cup final on Sunday, live on TalkSport 2 as well. It was a festival of football, and a couple of people have said to me, oh, the FA Cup final was boring. I didn't see it that way. I thought it was absolutely fascinating from my vantage point. Two really well-drilled, well-organised teams, some sensational players on player for Virgil van Dijk and Trent Alexander-Arnold. The way they were spraying passes from the back was superb. Diaz really introducing himself in his first FA Cup final. And Chelsea had opportunities. And I think Thomas Tuchel afterwards was left to rue those missed opportunities. But I did find it odd, and maybe this is symptomatic of where Chelsea are at, that they went into a penalty shootout in a cup final without a recognised striker on the pitch. That's okay. Something surely Thomas Tuchel has to address in the summer.
OK, we will get to the FA Cup final in just a second. But I think worth pointing out what you said is absolutely right. If you go back the last 25 years, if they've told us anything, it's that the big clubs take the FA Cup incredibly seriously. Since Chelsea won it in 1997, 22 of the subsequent 25 Cup finals have been won by Arsenal, Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea, and now Liverpool.
Off the top of Sadio Mane's head, Liverpool able to turn possession over, and it got Diaz in. Diaz across the base of goal, and he just couldn't quite find Thiago, who made the run forward. And now Diaz has made another excellent run, and he's goal side of Chalobah. Big chance, saved by Mendy. Chalobah's there to clear the rebound off the line, out as far as Keita, and he fires it wide. And there's plenty of room on the left-hand side for Marcus Alonso. Pulisic waiting and waiting, and now threads him in, and the angle is tight, and Alisson closed him down very quickly and got his body behind a shot that was on target. Goalless through 120, and it'll be settled by penalties again. It is Tsimikas, left-footed! Liverpool win the FA Cup!
Liverpool remain in the hunt for an historic quadruple after winning the FA Cup final 6-5 on penalties after a 0-0 draw at Wembley on Saturday afternoon. I don't know about you, Darren, but I think Crookie and I both thought that it was an absorbing contest in which basically you had chances at both ends, no goals, but loads of entertaining moments.
Yeah, absolutely. People talk about 0-0s and how they're bore draws. This one was anything but thriller minute stuff. Chances created, chances missed, attention getting to both sides. And I just thought it was a really compelling contest and I couldn't take my eyes off it. I think the best team won on the day. And I certainly think as far as... I did feel a lot of sympathy for Chelsea because they did turn up, first of all. And second of all, Mason Mount, when is he going to win an FA Cup final? Honestly...
Six cup finals now at Wembley that he's lost. Euros, League Cup finals, FA Cup finals.
So, listen, overall, a really good day for us as journalists, really good story and subplots within it. And I as I said before, I just think the FA Cup still does have that place in everybody's hearts. And I think that we go again next season.
Yeah, it certainly does, I think. And I think it certainly meant a lot to Liverpool, especially afterwards. They celebrated wildly. They absolutely loved it. There was a moment where Kostas Tsimikas, who obviously scored the winning penalty, was being carried on the shoulders of someone. You couldn't really see who that person was because he was engulfed in smoke and flags and flares and everything. So it was a brilliant atmosphere on Saturday afternoon. Let's talk a little bit about the way that Liverpool configured their attack. They started, of course, with Sadio Mane, with Luis Diaz and Mo Salah. But are they going to have Mo Salah available for the Champions League final, Crook? Because he had to come off very early in that first half.
Yeah, I did manage to grab a word with Mo Salah. We were interviewing Kostas Tsimikas, the hero of the hour, and apparently they're really good friends. So Mo Salah pretty much gate-crashed the interview, suddenly arrived in our little radio booth wearing his FA Cup winner's medal. And he said he was okay. He said it was precautionary. That was backed up by Tsimikas as well. So I think... Listen, will he play against Southampton on Tuesday night? I think that's a big decision that Jurgen Klopp will have to make. I would imagine he will be fit for the final day of the season and that Champions League final. Obviously, Virgil van Dijk went off towards the end of normal time, didn't feature in extra time. I've got the impression from Jurgen Klopp that was pre-planned because he was carrying some kind of issue going into the cup final as well. So maybe Liverpool's run and the fact they're competing on four fronts is starting to take its toll. But this is where the squad depth comes into play. I thought Matip did a good job when he came on alongside Konate. And obviously you've got Jota, who can be that real maverick, that real ace up your sleeve when he comes on. So I'm not overly concerned, especially when you factor in the fact that Mo Salah's goal-scoring form of late still isn't particularly good.
No, it isn't. That's true. But Sadio Mane certainly is, even if he didn't get off the score sheet on Saturday. But Luis Diaz was an absolute threat throughout the entire game, wasn't he? He was frightening how he didn't score. They hit the woodwork a number of times, and he was the main thorn in Chelsea's side. I spoke to Virgil van Dijk afterwards. He said he felt something in his knee in the first half, and he thought, OK, I just need to keep an eye on that. And then it got to the end of extra time, and he just thought, I don't think I can push it. And if he was going to do that, it could cause more problems. So he thought the best thing to do was take the advice of the medical staff, come off, and then maybe try and deal with it over the next week or so before the Champions League final. Because look, Liverpool could probably beat Southampton and win on the final day without him. But taking on Real Madrid without him in that back line will be difficult.
Yeah, it will be. Listen, I think both players did the right thing by coming off. Because basically, as far as the FA Cup is concerned, I said it earlier, there's a reality about the fact that in terms of priorities, it's not as high as some people would think in Liverpool's priorities, I think. And the fact that they've only really taken it seriously this season, apart from since Jurgen Klopp's come to the club. But I just think as far as Salah is concerned, soon as he felt a twinge, that was it. Come off. I don't think he should be playing on Tuesday. I think they can win the game without him against Southampton on Tuesday. They've got so much firepower within their ranks. I'm not even bothered about goal difference. Win the game. You know, that's the priority. Take Southampton seriously, respect them, and then see where you go from there. I think likewise for Virgil van Dijk, we all know the transformative effect he's had on the team since he's arrived. You do not go into games against players of the caliber of Karim Benzema without a Virgil van Dijk in your back line, because he will tear you to pieces. And I think if van Dijk and Salah are rested up, then they've got a really good chance of winning that Champions League and then worrying about Sunday when it comes.
It did make me chuckle. I spoke to Jurgen Klopp afterwards and said, you've now completed the clean sweep of domestic trophies. Do you ever allow yourself time to reflect on that? And he made a joke. He said, yeah, I'm going to go home and have a cigar. And I haven't got time for that. We've got to play Southampton on Tuesday, which he described as madness. And I thought, well, to be fair, Southampton players have been playing with a cigar in for a few weeks now. So I think you'll probably be OK, Jurgen.
Also, you know, it's not madness, you know, sir. I mean, that's what happens to successful teams.
Yeah.
As you are more and more successful, the Premier League and the authorities can't just postpone games and reconfigure the schedule and the fixture list because you have been successful. That is what happens to successful teams. They are asked to do it again and again. And actually, that's what makes them great. Their ability to be able to do it again and again, like a Federer, like a Lewis Hamilton, like, you know, all of the greatest sportsmen that we have ever seen, like a Frankel, the racehorse. If you can be asked to do it and step up a level each time against higher caliber opposition and still be able to find a way to win, that's what makes you great. That's why it's not just going to be about winning the trophies if they do it. It will be about the fact that they managed to cope with top class opposition, one game every 3 or 4 days, the intensity, the pressure, everything combined to be able to do it. So I wouldn't complain. I would actually celebrate the fact that he's got a team capable of being able to meet those challenges.
Yeah, and it isn't just a team, is it? It's a squad. And that's why Liverpool have been so successful this season, is because what they did at the end of the title-winning campaign was start to bring in some of the youngsters, some different players in. We all complained last year that their recruitment wasn't good enough during the summer after the title win, and they hadn't strengthened the numbers. They've done that since then. And now their squad looks such a wealth of talent. They've got so many options. They're so deep, the squad, that they can bring players on that can do a job. I mean, Tsimikas coming on holding his nerve. Do you want to take a penalty? Yeah, I'll take 7 or 8. No problem. You know, that's the sort of character that you want in the dressing room. That's the character that you want in your team when someone has to be replaced at this stage of the season. When you play now, the 60th game of the season on Saturday, their 61st will be Tuesday, 62nd by Sunday, and then ultimately the 63rd game of the season will be the Champions League final. But you need a squad to be able to compete in all of those fixtures, and Liverpool now have that. And it isn't unthinkable now, is it? It's not impossible. It's not 50-1. It is really possible that Liverpool could win all four trophies. They've won the League Cup. They've won the FA Cup. They're in the final of the Champions League, and because of what happened at the weekend at the London Stadium, Crook, there's every chance now that they might be able to catch Manchester City. We'll do that game in just a second, but let's just talk about it from a Liverpool point of view now. What are you thinking when you get that result from Sunday afternoon?
I think it would have been a contrast of emotions. 2-0 up at half-time, you'd have thought this was game on, and I think they would have then been turning their attention to Southampton, seeing, can we make up this goal difference gap on Tuesday night? And actually, if there's a team you want to play when you need goals, maybe Southampton are the perfect opponent. I do think that the 2-2 draw changes the dynamism. Manchester City needed 4 points from their two games to be confirmed of the title. I think they'll get those 4 points. I expect Liverpool to beat Southampton on Tuesday. I expect them to beat Wolverhampton Wanderers on the final day of the season, but I don't expect them to win the league.
What does this do for Chelsea? New owner, but no trophies this season. Same old problems in terms of not scoring enough goals this season. When you look at the statistics, you know, Romelu Lukaku may well be their top goal scorer this season, Darren, but it just hasn't worked out for him, has it?
No, it hasn't. I expect him to move on in the summer, particularly with the World Cup later this year. Roberto Martinez has already been suggesting that needs to happen and that he needs to play regular first team football. That quite clearly isn't going to happen.
Easier said than done, though, isn't it? How do you get rid of a 97.5 million pound asset who's earning the money that he's earning?
Well, you take a loss, and he has to be prepared to accept a loss if he wants to go somewhere, because clubs won't want to meet that level of expenditure. So really, the ball is in his court. But it's very simple. If he stays at Chelsea under Thomas Tuchel, he won't play. He's not a good enough fit. I think in the terms of the bigger picture, what this season does for Todd Boehly is focus his mind, because the bar now has been set for what he has to do. It won't be as easy as it was under Roman Abramovich, who was just prepared to throw money at the problem, because Boehly will obviously have to approach things in a different way. The first thing they've got to do is replace that defence. Thomas Tuchel's already said, Liverpool, they buy players, they bring more and more players in. We are seeing players leave at the end of their contracts, so they've got to be able to build from the back if they're going to have any chance. That's what Chelsea have always done, and they've been impregnable at their best. I look at the landscape and I just don't know who they bring in to be able to do that again. I'd be amazed if they sold Kante to Man United, but that's a different story.
Well, it looks like a very big job that Todd Boehly's got to do over the summer period. Or we won't be doing it, will it be? I mean, I think Marina Granovskaya and Bruce Buck are going to stick around, and Thomas Tuchel is going to have to somehow find a way out of what is a very difficult situation.
Because are you worried, Sam?
I'm not worried. I just think it's just a big job. I just think there's so much to be done. Antonio Rudiger is such an influence in the team. Says RF Pilicueta's powers are waning, but an influence in the dressing room. He wants to leave, but he's worried about how to exit the club and still maintain his legacy. Christensen is leaving. There are other players that are thinking about moving on. You've got Lukaku, who desperately needs to go off and play. Werner's not good enough. I mean, ultimately, you've got a situation where if Chelsea want to be competitive, they probably need to sign 5 players in the summer. That's not always easy to do. It's even harder to blend them into a unit and try and get them into a team before the start of the season, which is going to come down very, very quickly. Community Shield is the 30th of July, for Christ's sake. I mean, that's just ludicrous.
Well, so Chelsea won't need to worry about that game, will they?
No, they won't, but they have to get back in the week after.
Crook, stop it.
Listen, he's just pleased the heat's turned off Manchester United. I mean, the fact that Chelsea have lost another cup final on penalties is really painful. But I think what's really painful is the glee with which rival fans absolutely love the fact that it was Mason Mount that missed the key penalty. 6 cup finals he's lost. He's been an absolute stalwart for Chelsea. If you look at his statistics, I think only Harry Kane, as an Englishman, has been involved in more goals than him over the course of the season. Crook's desperate to give him a battering. In fact, the other day he gave him a battering and I sent him all the statistics saying, how can you have a go at this guy? And he went, well, I've got high standards. Obviously, he has high standards as well, and he'll be disappointed with himself. It was a terrible penalty, and I think he'll admit that if you ever spoke to him about it. But, you know, he is a sort of symbol of Chelsea now. So when he does mess up, and it is costly, the rest of the fans from other clubs will hone in on that and really will give him a bit of stick. But anyway, enough about the cup final, because there is a whole load of other matches to get involved with, including the game down at the London Stadium, where it finished West Ham 2, Manchester City 2.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
And what a game it was. 2-2, Jarrod Bowen scoring twice in the first half. Manchester City got themselves back into the game. And then, almost inexplicably, with 5 minutes to go, you think this is it. This is the moment that Manchester City seal the title, effectively. Up steps Riyad Mahrez and Fabianski makes a terrific, terrific save. I mean, it was a great send-off for Mark Noble. What impacted the game, do you think, more? The atmosphere that was generated at London Stadium or the fact that Manchester City's back four was made up of Zinchenko, Fernandinho, and the confusion of that, the movement of that really seemed to cause them an issue in the first half?
Yeah, I think that was the issue. And it wasn't just in the first half, actually. There were two big moments in the second half when Manchester City's defence really put themselves in jeopardy. You had Jarrod Bowen firing into the side netting from a tight angle when he could have completed what would have been a stunning hat-trick. I personally think Jarrod Bowen deserves a more than honourable mention when we talk about players of the year and the impact he's had on that West Ham team. And Mikel Antonio seizes on a poor back pass, goes one-on-one with Ederson, tries a ridiculous chip, quite frankly, when he should just put his foot through the ball. And that may well have blown the title race wide open, but he puts it over the crossbar. I think defensively, if you're Liverpool, you will be looking at that and thinking, well, let's hope the likes of Ollie Watkins and Danny Ings and Buendia and Coutinho can seize on Manchester City's woes on the final day of the season, because they look a poor side defensively with Fernandinho at the heart of their back line. They miss a bit of leadership without the likes of Diaz. And Zinchenko had a torrid afternoon isolated against Jarrod Bowen. But having said that, they never panicked. They never looked like they were under stress, Manchester City. They worked their way back into the game. Their tactics never changed. They kept trying to pick their way through the lines and beat what was a really stubborn West Ham rear guard, and probably should have won the game with that Mahrez penalty. So I still think that character, that winning mentality, will see them through on the final day of the season. But defensively, they have some concerns.
Yeah, Manchester City play Aston Villa on the final day of the season. Liverpool take on Wolves, both at home. The top of the table looks like this right now. Liverpool in second place, 36 games played, 86 points, 4 points behind Manchester City, who have played a game more, 37, and 90 points. But they play on Tuesday night, Liverpool against Southampton. If they win that, then there will be just a point difference between them going into the final game of the season. Manchester City have the edge on goal difference. So, I mean, not that that'll probably come into play, because the idea will be for both of them to win their games. If Liverpool win all their games and Manchester City drop points, then they will win the title. If Manchester City win their game on Sunday, then they will win it. But Stevie G can win Liverpool a title at last, Darren.
Won't fall over, will he?
You guys are so mischievous. You know, I think the thing that has been a feature of this Premier League season, not just the title races, the amount of times supposedly lesser teams are written off against the superpowers and have managed to pull off big results. You go right back to Brentford, for example, against Arsenal. West Ham held City in the League Cup, put them out of that competition. A very strong City side as well. They've beaten Liverpool this season. They've beaten Man United this season. And I think I will be surprised if Steven Gerrard doesn't have Aston Villa primed and ready to go. Ultimately, I have to be honest, I don't think they'd have the quality to keep out a side that scored 96 times so far this season and just have so many different points of attack. You could argue they don't even need Erling Haaland. But I think that he will give it a good go. And there's a fascinating symmetry about the fact that, you know, he could have won it for Liverpool as a player, and there was that fateful slip, as you've been joking about. But now he's got the chance to do it as a manager, and it'd be fascinating to see if he can.
City obviously had to fight back from two goals down. They've got character about them, haven't they? And Jack Grealish would be delighted to get on the score sheet. Explain to me what Vladimir Soufal was thinking when he decided to put a diving header through his own net crook.
I think that was mental fatigue, to be honest. It's been a long season for West Ham. They've competed really well on two fronts. It's the first time in their history they're going to finish in the top seven in successive top flight seasons. So I think David Moyes and his players deserve a lot of credit for that. But they were under a lot of pressure from Manchester City in the second half. And I think in the end, Soufal just gave way, subsided to that pressure. Could be a big turning point for West Ham as well, because I do think there's a big difference between being in the Europa League next season with a carrot of a Champions League place at the end of it and the Europa Conference League. Of course, all eyes now on Manchester United. Can they better West Ham's result on the final day and finish in the top six?
Just to be honest, I don't think all eyes are on Manchester United now, mate. I've got to be completely clear about that. I think there might be people who are just, you know, passingly paying it a little bit of attention.
Big difference to the rebuild. You know, if you're in a competition that has a Champions League place for the winners, or if you're in the Europa Conference League, I think that does make a big difference.
It does, but it's not the biggest. It's certainly not the biggest story in the Premier League over the next week, is it? And then, you know, West Ham have got every chance of usurping Manchester United, bearing in mind that Manchester United's last performance was, well, will have been by the time they kick off 2 weeks ago. And then obviously they play against a Crystal Palace team who are playing well under Patrick Vieira. They do actually have a game on Thursday night as well against Everton, which we'll come on to in just a few moments. But West Ham have got a winnable fixture at the end of the season as well. And you know, they'll still feel as if they're fighting right to the very end. And I think that's great for them, because they could have wilted after that Europa League semi-final defeat in Frankfurt. I mean, the amount of pressure that was on them going into that game was absolutely huge. And the expectation, similar. You know, so many people went over there. So many people, it was the biggest day of their West Ham supporting lives going to Frankfurt for that semi-final, hoping to get to the first major final in a generation in terms of European football. But the fact that they've come back and they've put up great fights over the last two weekends and kept themselves in the hunt for a Europa League place is credit to David Moyes, isn't it, Darren?
Absolutely it is. And what it says is that he has a basic level that he expects from his players, regardless of whatever team he puts out. I slightly, ever so slightly disagree with you, Crook, in so much as I don't think Soufal's header was mental fatigue. I thought, watching that performance from West Ham, that it showed what they can produce when they are fresh and when they are fit. And they'd had a clear week for the first time in ages. And it just shows what might have been if David Moyes had brought players in January to maybe just take the heat off some of his key players going into the second half of the season, because I thought the performance was exceptional. And had it not been the case that Ten Hag is going to cut his Ajax tenure short prematurely and take over at Man United straight away, I would have put my house on West Ham getting that sixth place, because United's away record at the moment is abysmal. But I just wonder whether him turning up for work sooner than expected might actually prove the difference in that final game, get a performance, get into a competition, as you've been saying, with a Champions League place at the end of it, to give himself a bit of an insurance policy, if you like. And I think that could deprive West Ham of a Europa League place that actually they deserve.
Okay, so let's talk about that then, because that is news that's sort of broken in the last sort of 12 hours or so, that Erik ten Hag did a press conference yesterday in Dutch. I mean, I've only seen the subtitled version of it. So he sort of suggests, he doesn't say, I'm going to work tomorrow at 9 a.m. and going to turn up at Carrington and take training for the rest of the season. But that seemed to be the sort of inference, didn't it? He said, I've got to start work on Monday morning. I've got to get in there and start getting my hands dirty because there's so many problems to sort out. So he's not going on the Ajax post-season tour to Curaçao. I think that's how you say it.
Can I just jump in there, Sam, just before you answer, Sam, because obviously our reporters who cover Man United for the Daily Mirror, we are reporting that that is going to be the case. And, right. and they made a couple of checks as well to get the picture. So that will develop in more details at the time. We are recording this, obviously, on Monday morning, but our colleagues and our reporters out of the paper are getting more detail on that. So we'll know more in the coming days. But certainly it does appear to be the case that he isn't going to go on the postseason tour and that he's going to start work at United sooner than expected, yes.
Well, so do you reckon he'll be in the dugout on Sunday?
No. The information I have is that he's sort of already unofficially started work. You would expect that. There have been a lot of conversations with the Manchester United hierarchy about their summer spending plans, about how they tackle the new season. From what I'm told, he isn't expected in Manchester this week. He may well be in the UK, but I think he's more likely to be operating out of United London offices. Ralph Rangnick is continuing to take charge of training. He, I'm told, will be the manager for the final game of the season. But I think what it will do is focus the players' minds, as Darren says. You know, the fact the new headmaster is keeping a much closer eye on the unruly school children than maybe they would have expected, I think could work to Manchester United's advantage. I guess it's a balancing act for United, because I think it's a brilliant thing that he's sacrificing that post-season tour, not going off on a summer holiday, but it shows he realises the enormity of the task. But I think as a club, they're trying to be respectful and not to undermine Ralph Rangnick as well. So that's why I wouldn't imagine we'll see him at Carrington this week. I think he'll turn up pretty soon after the Crystal Palace game. That could change, obviously.
If only the players had been respectful to Ralph Rangnick and not undermined him over the course of the last 6 months, might have been a different situation altogether. Darren, you're just about to ask Crook a question?
Yeah, I was about to ask a question. I think there are a lot of niceties being observed here, but I don't know if there's any point. I mean, as far as Ajax
seems to be,
it doesn't. I mean, Ajax need their new manager to come in and take control fairly quickly. They know that Ten Hag is leaving, so I'm not quite sure why he would go on their postseason tour anyway. Your job is done. You've won the league. As far as Ralph Rangnick's concerned, he signed a contract with Austria. He is going to come out of the dugout. There is zero point in him being in the dugout on Sunday
arguably this is an emergency situation, so it's all hands on pump. If it means absolutely. That he comes in and gets involved for 1 week and they get into the Europa League, well, that's a good start.
100%.
I agree. I don't disagree. This is just the information from following up the story in Darren's newspaper. I spoke to sources at Old Trafford, and that's the information that's been relayed to me.
Yeah, no. That's the other thing. The facts are the facts. These are just our opinions here in this little forum here. And I'm sure the people listening to us and watching us will have their own view. But I just think in this era of working from home or whatever, he doesn't necessarily need to be in Manchester, but he does need to send a message that he is now in control and that the players now will be accountable to him and not to Rangnick. And so they won't be able to, I think there's a phrase that we would use that we probably shouldn't use on TV, but they won't be able to take liberties anymore in quite the same way that they have been. And let's see now if Ten Hag makes a pronouncement and a player feels bold enough to go on to, social media to contend with it. Because all of the small levels of disrespect we saw from the players towards Ralph Rangnick, they won't be able to do anymore. And I just think the message that Ten Hag sends out by saying, I'm in control now,
I'm here,
huge. Manchester United.
It wouldn't surprise me if he does make an appearance at Selhurst Park on the final day of the season.
We shall see. All right, okay. We'll move on from Manchester United. Lots more to talk about, including, I mean, I wonder who's in control of the top four race now.
9 months of wondering and worrying, and it all comes down to the next few days or so. Kane hits it right footed and scores! And Tottenham Hotspur lead for 3 points, vital to matters still to be decided at opposite ends of the Premier League table. So Spurs have beaten Burnley and Leeds United have long since been whipping up the atmosphere here. Gelhardt gets to the byline, checks onto his left. Can he find room for a cross? At the far post, strike! And strike equalises and Ellen Road goes mad! The story here is about Leeds United hauling themselves out of the bottom three. With one more game to play at the Brentford Community Stadium.
The home fans boo. Mahrez taking his time. Slowly, slowly running up to it. And it's saved by Fabianski. Point though, which is going to keep things in Manchester City's control of the title race. Full time, West Ham 2, Man City 2.
It's Everton 2, Brentford 3. And things going from bad to worse for Everton because Solomon Rondon has just become their second player sent off today. They are down to 9 men.
Well, top four was up for grabs again over the weekend and the relegation places changed once more. Tottenham beat Burnley by a goal to nil live on TalkSport. Then Leeds drew with Brighton in dramatic circumstances live on TalkSport straight after that. The relegation picture became a little bit clearer as Everton and Burnley both lost and Leeds drew. It means that the bottom of the table looks like this. Everton 16th, 36 points. And from 36 games. Leeds United 17th, 37 games played, 35 points. So they've played a game more than Everton, have a point less, but their goal difference is minus 38. That could be absolutely key. Burnley then in 18th position, dropping into the bottom three, 34 points from 36 games and a minus 18 goal difference. And Watford and Norwich obviously already gone at the top of the table. As far as the top four is concerned, Tottenham fourth at the moment, 68 points in 37 games, but Arsenal go to Newcastle United on Monday Night Football with 66 points from 36 games and could go above them with a victory. But the last day of the season, I'm sure, will be fascinating, especially seeing as we can already sort of guess that Norwich will probably be cannon fodder. So Tottenham should get another 3 points on Sunday. But will Arsenal against an Everton side, who we'll talk about in detail in just a second. Let's focus on Tottenham Hotspur and that game between them and Burnley. Because this game was decided by one thing, a penalty, a VAR decision. There has been some sort of controversy about it. Some Arsenal fans getting a little bit irritated about the fact that the VAR intervenes in this handball. I don't understand why. I'm reading a paper this morning in the Sun in which Mark Halsey says the law is an ass. Well, you can disagree with the law. Mm-hmm. He also says, I'm not convinced that VAR should have recommended the VAR review, which led to Tottenham's penalty, which is nonsense because it is a clear breach of the rules by Ashley Barnes, inadvertent or not, accidental or not. That is the definition of an IFAB penalty, according to the law book. I went back and looked at it last night. How on earth anybody can complain about this decision? I don't know. It's beyond me. It's just stupid. It is the law. If you don't like the law, I totally get it because the law does seem to be a little bit prescriptive in this area, especially with handball. And they have changed it so many times that sometimes it's difficult to keep up with. But according to the current laws of the game, that is handball.
Yeah, agreed. It's unfortunate. I don't think there was too much intent, but it's the old cliche when you're at the bottom of the table, these are the things that can go against you. It's not a misuse of VAR because it was a clear and obvious error. It was a penalty. I think actually Tottenham deserved to win the game, particularly in the first half. They peppered that Burnley goal without managing to find a way through. So I don't really think Arsenal and Burnley fans can have too much to complain about. I think, as you say, it was the rule being applied correctly. Whether you agree with the rule or not, I think that's a whole new debate.
Yeah, Mike Jackson wasn't happy about it. He's never going to be because it was a decisive moment. But has he lost a little bit of magic, Darren?
I was so tempted to do some Michael Jackson puns.
You can't keep doing Michael Jackson songs.
I know, but I'm just... All right, okay.
I would say we'll run out, but there's quite a few of them.
No, I mean, we did some last week and you can't really beat that. So I think as far as Spurs are concerned, I was fascinated to listen to what you were saying about Mark Halsey because he says the law is an ass, but he was involved in enforcing the law for a long time. And it always sticks in the craw when people who could speak when they're in a position to actually do something about the situation don't. And then afterwards, they're very vocal. Listen, as you were rightly saying,
be angry with the law, not the ref. The ref was imposing the law. And the fact is that Burnley had a long time to overcome that deficit and they didn't have the quality to do that. I don't think it takes anything from the job from that Mike Jackson has done because he's been terrific in his time at the club. But the bottom line is Tottenham were just too strong. They knew they had a job to do. They didn't have, it didn't have to be pretty. It didn't have to be spectacular. They just had to win. And that's what they did. And that's why it goes to the wire.
Yeah, Burnley, I mean, could be, I mean, they could be on the verge of relegation by the time we go there on Thursday night. They play Aston Villa on Thursday night at Villa Park. I'll be there for TalkSport. It's live and exclusive on TalkSport, that game, Aston Villa Burnley. And obviously, they then have an odd situation where they're playing Newcastle United, who everyone thought were going to be relegation candidates at the beginning of the season. Very much not now, at home on the final day of the season as well. So they've got a job on their hands. So have Leeds United. Leeds went behind early in their game against Brighton. Terrific goal from Danny Welbeck. Brilliantly well taken. But does it give them a little bit of momentum going into their last game away at Brentford that they scored right at the death?
Yeah, it can be a game-changing moment. Sometimes you need a dramatic incident like that to change the course of your season, change the course of history. So I think it's given themselves a fighting chance. But for me, the big moment in that game wasn't the Pascal Strauch equaliser. Brilliant play by Gerhardt to carve open the opportunity. It was the missed header from Danny Welbeck a few minutes earlier, because if he scores that and Brighton go 2-0 up, it's game over and it's probably season over for Leeds. So I think if they do stay up, a magnum of champagne might be heading for the Welbeck residence at the end of the season. I think it will end up being a two-horse race because I can see Everton rallying and galvanising themselves to beat Crystal Palace at home in midweek. That will get them over the line. I think Burnley have the easier fixtures on paper. Obviously, they've got two bites at the cherry. Aston Villa away, who have already beaten them at Turf Moor, and then Newcastle at home on the last day. But I've got to say, I can't remember a season where there's been so much at stake going into the last day of the season, and so many subplots as well. You've got Brentford against Leeds. Pontus Janssen could play a part in relegating his former club. You've got Chris Wood going back to Turf Moor, having left in controversial circumstances, could send his old employers into the Championship. And as we've already spoken about, you've got Steven Gerrard in a position to win Liverpool the Premier League title. It is going to be a brilliant last day.
Mikel Arteta, the former Everton captain, as a manager of Arsenal, threatening to send Everton down to the Championship.
It's going to be sensational. And actually, obviously, we have to divide the games up between us and our radio rivals. And usually you're all fighting over one particular fixture because you've got seven or eight dead rubbers. That isn't going to be the case this weekend.
It doesn't matter. We were talking about it yesterday, actually. You know, we do this sort of machinations of what happens if this happens and what are we going to pick and where are we going to pick? Okay, so if they pick this, we're going to pick that. And, you know, what game we're going to end up here. And I said, it doesn't matter. At one stage, the editor said, it doesn't really matter because whatever we get, it will be at the centre of a story. Because ultimately, even if you're not a Manchester City or Liverpool, you'd be at Arsenal, and then you've got the Arsenal story and the Everton story. You've got two sides of a coin. You could go anywhere, and there's something riding on it that's going to capture the attention of the nation, because it is. There's so much happening, especially in that top and the bottom of the Premier League going into the last few days of the season. Leeds forced Robert Sanchez into a couple of saves during this game.
Yeah.
And they did have a threat, but their atmosphere towards the end of the match, prior to the Pascal Strauch goal, was pretty toxic, wasn't it? I mean, there were lots of chance of sack the board. Whatever happens, I don't think that the supporters are as accepting of Jesse Marsh as maybe the board thought they would be, Darren.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I think that what happened yesterday was an expression of the frustration at the position they felt they were in. They felt at that moment they were going down. Until Strauch scored, they felt it was all over. They felt that they were at home, they were masters of their own destiny, that they would win. And I think had they gone in front and held on, it would have been a very different atmosphere. I know what you're talking about. There was some chance for Marcelo Bielsa where at one point where Jesse Marsh was making substitutions. But the fact is, The fact is that had Bielsa stayed in charge, it had been down a long time ago. It is because of Marcelo Bielsa and that open, enterprising way of playing football that they'd conceded as many goals as they had done. And they were the easiest team at that point in the Premier League to play against. Jesse Marsh has given them a chance. And I think that it's more about the board. It's more about investment. It's more about reminding the board that regardless of what happens, they've got to do more to bring in more quality ahead of next season.
If they do survive, do you think that Jesse Marsh will thank Mother Teresa?
I know you're going to come in, Sam, but I have to say, I have an issue with this.
What, Mother Teresa? You have an issue with Mother Teresa?
No, I have an issue with the fact that so many people are ripping him apart for talking about... There is a stereotype around footballers that they're idiots, that they've got no brains, that they don't read. And we actually look down at people who used to deride, for example, Graham Lasso for reading a newspaper and a coach. But I think within our industry, there's a little bit of snobbery around that within our industry, because why would he not use somebody inspirational to lift his players in a difficult moment for the football
club? Just seems a bit out of context, actually. And when he said
it just felt
a little bit cheesy. Whereas I think sometimes when you use other sort of inspirational figures or the way that you present it, it can come across as a... Also, the other thing I would say is that most managers, if they do invoke some sort of higher being or some sort of inspirational figure, they do it behind closed doors where no one really knows about it. And you find out maybe 10 years later if someone leaks it out. You know, going around telling everybody that that's what you're doing, I think it came across a little bit cheesy. And it opened him up for ridicule. I thought it opened him up for ridicule.
No, I don't.
So I don't think he's ever really spoken about Mother Teresa and Leeds in the same breath before, to be honest. It's not a club you would usually associate with someone like Mother Teresa, is it?
I don't know. There's quite a lot of healing to be done there. Right. Okay.
I just think very quickly, I think the fact that he's being derided about this says a lot about our industry and the fact that we think we're progressive, but actually we're not. We really do stick to round pegs, round holes, and a very one-dimensional way of looking at the world.
Well, I feel like we've been chastised there, Crook, for taking a look at Jesse Marsh. Okay. Please, Mother Teresa, forgive me. Right, move on. Everton 2, Brentford 3. After a rapid recovery, Everton slipped at home to Brentford, and injuries to Mina, Delph, and obviously the others haven't helped at all over the course of the season. In fact, that's been one of the big problems that Everton have had. But getting two players sent off in a game like this doesn't help either. And look, I don't know what Salomon Rondon was doing, bearing in mind that Everton need bodies at this stage of the situation, bearing in mind the situation that they are in, fighting for their lives at the bottom of the table. He's going to be suspended for Thursday night's game. It was a ridiculous challenge. He was right to be sent off. But Jarrad Branthwaite should never have been sent off, not because what he did was wrong or wasn't wrong. It was. And in any other circumstances, it was a red card. But prior to that, there was a shirt pull on Richarlison, which under Law 12, Section 2, is a holding of an opponent, should have been penalised by a penalty. It was so blatant, I don't understand why the VAR did not go back and look at it. That would have changed the entire situation. Branthwaite wouldn't have been sent off. Everton most likely would have been 2-0 up. The complexion of the game had changed. That was the first error by the referee and the VAR. And then, to compound it, when Richarlison gets his penalty, Mads Beck Sorensen, who commits the foul, does not get yellow carded for that foul in the penalty area, which it was a clear yellow card. He'd already been booked and should have been off. Again, that should have changed the nature of the game. It didn't. And Everton end up losing the match. Now, I can understand that these calls are sort of in the moment 50-50 situations, but they are big calls that have gone against Everton in a big game, which absolutely changed the relegation picture.
Yeah, because without the sending off, the first one, I think they would have gone on and won the game quite comfortably. It changes the whole dynamics. Everton aren't a good enough side. They're not a well-disciplined enough side to see out that kind of game with 10 men. I do think once they went 2-1 up, Frank Lampard should have maybe thought about some changes that would have made Everton better as a defensive unit. I think they were still trying to score more goals, and perhaps you can question his game management. I thought he was quite circumspect after the game, actually. He didn't really rant and rave about the the decisions. But I think you're absolutely right. It was a clear penalty for the shirt pull on Richarlison. It was still poor defending from Braithwaite to get himself the wrong side and then bring his man down. So if you take that in isolation, he can have no complaints. And I think you're probably right about Mad Speck should have been sent off. I'm not as vehement as you are on that one. But yeah, Everton can feel very hard done by.
Yeah, but you can understand if you're an Everton supporter, when you're looking at it, you're thinking, oh, how have all of these calls gone against us? I don't really understand it.
Listen, we've disagreed on one or two things today, but you are 150% right on this, on the entire sequence that you actually describe. And some people look at Frank Lampard and say, hang on a minute, you're criticising the referee's focus on your own team. And there are issues for him to look at regarding his own team and their inability to keep their heads in difficult moments. But at the same time, somebody officiating in that match was poor, particularly when they have VAR to help them. They have the technology to help them. But sometimes the people operating the technology are incompetent themselves. And I know that's a strong word to use, but we are in moments that cost people their jobs, that have an impact on people's livelihoods at a time when we've got a cost of living crisis. You know, these are difficult moments. And if Everton were to go down, you know, a lot of people will have a lot stronger things to say than calling the officials operating their technology that could have had an impact in a situation like this incompetent.
Yep. And as a result of that, you know, I mean, the focus is on Michael Oliver because he was the referee in the middle. But actually, you know, the VAR needs to play a part, needs to be stronger, needs to be in his ear saying, look, it was a serious shirt pull. I mean, again, I'm looking at what Mark Halsey said about it. And he seems to think that there was just a holding of each other's shirts between Christopher Ayer and Richarlison. I didn't see it like that. I thought Richarlison's shirt was pulled back so far it was going to rip at one stage. And I think, you know, in any other part of the field, that's going to be a free kick anyway.
See what I mean about Mark Halsey? You know, he's calling the rules not fit for purpose when they suit what his agenda is. But then you have a situation like that, clear to everybody, and suddenly he's making excuses for it. That's part of the problem.
Well, it's a part of a problem that, you know, there's the lack of consistency. And it was a bit of a debate on Twitter yesterday, like, you know, talking about the handball, and someone was saying, yeah, but the laws aren't applied evenly. And you know that even if the Ashley Barnes thing is like really annoying because you don't agree from a moral standpoint that should be a handball, the fact that it's in law, you can justify it. But the laws aren't applied consistently over the course of the season. So whereas this week that was a handball, next week it might not be. I hope that's not the case because I think it's pretty clear cut that one. But I understand that when you look at the Everton situation, Everton fans legitimately will be putting their hands up saying, what on earth is going on? Look, let's not be completely one-eyed about this. Actually, those decisions were really bad. It did change this game, but Everton have conceded 59 goals over the course of the season, which is the most that they've conceded in the Premier League season for 21 years. So the reason they're in the problems that they are, Crook, is because they can't defend, they can't keep the ball out of the net.
Yeah, and they miss Yerry Mina. I mean, you look at the back line that Frank Lampard had to deploy yesterday, you wouldn't really want to be going into a game that could decide your Premier League future with that back line. So it seems ridiculous when you look at the money that Everton have spent, but if they do stay up this season, that's a squad that is in major need of surgery. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, didn't know much about it, but he's on the score sheet. His first goal for open play since August. That might just give him a boost between now and the end of the season. Although
it's
I think
goal.
He'll probably
it's
leave.
My goal. It's my goal. It's my goal. He kept saying to the referee, it was my goal.
I don't mind that as a centre-forward. I think you need that sort of selfishness, but I think he may well be sacrificed this summer to generate funds to give Frank Lampard the option of revamping the squad. Jordan Pickford's had an excellent end to the season. I'm told that maybe they could cash in on him as well. So I think it's going to be an interesting summer at Everton. I think out the bottom three, as I've said already, I think they're the most likely to survive. But these are two games that are going to be fraught with tension, particularly at Goodison Park on Thursday night. The atmosphere is going to be electric. I think Frank Lampard is still a bit too emotional for me in the game, and maybe that had an impact in the second sending off because it was just such a brainless challenge from Salomon Rondon. Was he too fired up? Was he tapping into the crowd's energy too much? Again, game management on Thursday night, because Crystal Palace are a difficult side to play against under Patrick Vieira. They will not roll over.
Yeah, one more win from the final two games will guarantee survival for Everton. They've got Crystal Palace at home on Thursday. Arsenal away on Sunday. Leeds have got an inferior goal difference. It means they have to finish ahead on points or they will be relegated. They've got Brentford away on Sunday. And Brentford obviously going to bring the curtain down. A brilliant season so far. They've got 35 points. Burnley have got a couple of games still to play. They require a point at least. And four will all but assure safety for them. If they were to get a point on Thursday night against Aston Villa, they'll go above Leeds United on goal difference. And all the pressure would be on Leeds going into the final day of the season. It is going to be absolutely gripping. There are some other games to have a quick look at before we leave you. Not that they mean too much in the grand scheme of things. Where do you want to start? Should we start with Watford 1, Leicester 5? Should we start there? Because I don't think I've ever seen defending as bad as the defending that has been on offer from Watford recently, apart from their game against Everton, because they hate Everton. And they sort of like, you know, puffed their chests out because of the Marco Silva, Richarlison, Doucouré, all that sort of stuff that went on with the snakes and all that kind of bits and pieces a couple of years ago. They raised their game for the match against Everton, but they have been absolutely abysmal in terms of conceding goals over the course of the season, haven't they? And their defending on Sunday night was laughable, really.
Yeah, listen, nothing about Watford now surprises me. They've been shambolic from the start of the season to the end. I think, well, not I think, we can all see that probably half that squad is committed. The other half can't wait to get out of there. I would not be surprised if some players want to leave, if other players are picked off by clubs who want to do a canny bit of business. Ismaïla Sarr looks too good for that Watford squad. Emmanuel Dennis could lead the line for a West Ham, maybe even an Everton next season. Although I think he could do better than an Everton right now, because I think Everton need a bit of a root and branch review as well. But I think as far as Watford are concerned, Roy Hodgson deserved better, didn't get it. And as a club, like I said before, I don't like it when clubs go down. We know about the cost. We talk about the football, but there's a human cost as well to lots of people. But in terms of the way that they've run that club, it's been poor. And in footballing terms, they're getting what they deserve.
Yeah, and look, you know, Roy Hodgson wasn't sort of mincing his words yesterday when he sort of said, you know, bad mistakes led to the goals. When you analyse the goals we conceded, there isn't a lot of good you could say. Crass individual errors, and we find ourselves on the end of a very bad defeat. We had the worst home record in all the leagues. You need your wins at home. The fans are entitled to be frustrated and upset with us and to make their opinions heard. And they did, in a way, the Watford fans yesterday, by not turning up. There was literally, basically, only 30% of the seats were full at Vicarage Road yesterday. I mean, you can sort of massage the statistics on tickets sold, et cetera, et cetera. But people voted with their feet yesterday. They decided not to go and watch that football match, Alex.
Yeah, and you can understand their frustrations. I think at the end of the season, the league table will tell us that Norwich are the worst team in the Premier League because they'll lose to Tottenham and therefore can't get themselves off the bottom. But Watford have certainly run them close, and arguably with a better group of players who just haven't performed. I mean, Darren mentioned Ismaïla Sarr there, who in the past has been admired by Liverpool and I believe may still be on their list, Manchester United as well. But you're taking a bit of a leap of faith because he's been dreadful. He's been as poor as everybody else in a Watford shirt this season. Emmanuel Dennis is pretty much down tools, but I think he's probably got enough credit in the bank, as Darren says, to persuade somebody in the Premier League to offer him a lifeline. But apart from that, I can't see clubs queuing around the door for these Watford players. I think there's a heck of a rebuild job on for Rob Edwards. And can I just address Roy Hodgson's comments pre-match when he said that he wouldn't recognise Rob Edwards? He's never met him. That's simply not true, because he was actually at the training ground along with Ray Lewington when Rob Edwards turned up to discuss terms and agree a contract. So I think that's really poor from somebody who's seen as the sort of elder statesman of British coaches to try and throw his successor under a bus. I think it's totally needless. And I have to say, speaking to Watford fans, a lot of the comments that Roy Hodgson has made over the course of the season and not acknowledging them at Crystal Palace the other week, he's certainly not endeared himself to the Watford supporters.
It didn't work. It didn't work. He didn't fit. He didn't manage to sort of ingratiate himself with the supporters. I think the people at the club actually get on quite well with him and they're all very sort of respectful of him. But I think it was just a job too far to him for him. And that's not like ageism in any way, shape or form. But it just didn't, to me, feel as if he was focused enough on trying to get the team out of the situation they were and building the bridges that needed to be built. I mean, there was so much that needed to be done there. I don't think he was capable of it. I probably wasn't capable of it. They've got 23 points and they've conceded 75 goals, which is quite remarkable, really, because, you know, things don't go their way. I mean, they play Chelsea on the final day of the season. There's every chance that they could end up with the worst defence in the league. That could happen, although it depends who's playing up front for Chelsea. Who's plays in goal for Leicester City on the final day of the season? And where was Kasper Schmeichel yesterday?
Well, it's an interesting one. I'll let Darren come in a moment, but I got some information last week. It was in my transfer notebook on the TalkSport website that Kasper Schmeichel could possibly be coming to the end of his time at Leicester. He's only got a year left on his contract. I think he's made it pretty clear, both publicly and privately, that he wants to play in European football, wants to play in the Champions League. So he has a decision to make. I understand there is a meeting between him, Brendan Rodgers, and the board penciled in very soon after the final game of the season to discuss his future. But it was interesting, the timing of that information and the fact that Danny Ward then suddenly finds himself in goal. I think Brendan Rodgers passed it off as sort of a pre-planned situation that they would give Ward some game time at the end of the season. But I don't think it's a coincidence, Darren.
No, I don't think it was either. I think you summed it up very well. I think as far as Kasper Schmeichel is concerned, he wants to play European football and Leicester haven't managed that. I just wonder if he might be jumping too soon, because I think Leicester will go again. Brendan Rodgers, very ambitious. The club have the finance to be able to bring players in. I think there'll be a big shake-up now that we've reached the end of the season. And it could just be, okay, generally when players decide to make decisions like this, there's normally someone somewhere that is aware, shall we say, that they're about to make that decision. And I obviously have to phrase it very carefully. But I just wonder if Leicester might be a club that that go again in the summer, and they, once they reinvigorate that side, they might just turn into a club that he might have turned his back on a bit quickly, a bit too quickly.
Interesting. Okay, we don't want to turn our back on Aston Villa and Crystal Palace too quickly, but they drew 1-1 this weekend. Anyone see the game?
Mm.
Well, you did. Mm. You didn't see the whole game, did you? That's not
the whole game. No.
Yeah, no. You saw the goals, didn't you? You saw the goals. Yeah.
They were good. They were very good.
They're good.
Okay. What happened? Apparently, the game was terrible.
They did.
Apparently, the game was terrible.
That's why I was grateful to have only seen the highlights. but as I say, you know, I think Palace. Look, the best thing to say about Palace is that overall, they have been better for the arrival of Patrick Vieira. They'll finish mid-table. They've got a really good, solid base to build on defensively.
It's lower mid-table now, though, isn't it? I mean, it's not like mid-table. I mean,
It is, but lower mid-table. It's mid-table. The bottom line is that they're safe from relegation and they've got a platform to build on. You know, the direction he wants to take the club. They had a terrific cup run. Hopefully, they'll be able to have another season of Colin Gallagher, maybe even signing permanently.
I'm not sure that's
going to
happen.
Chelsea need more players than anybody else.
I was speaking to somebody associated with Palace a couple of weeks ago, and there was a suspicion that maybe Frank Lampard could be ready to swoop in if Everton stay up. They're not as confident, I don't think, of keeping Conor Gallagher as maybe they were earlier in the season.
If you were Conor Gallagher, would you go to Everton and work under Lampard, even though you'd be working under Lampard? Or would you start a Crystal Palace side where the first steps towards an identity, a solid style of play, a decent foundation defensively behind you, a group of young players all pushing in the same direction? Which of the two would you go for?
It's an interesting conundrum. It's a really interesting conundrum.
What's your answer then, Crook? Come on, what's your answer?
Well, on the face of it, Everton are a bigger club. But there is more stability at Crystal Palace. And listen...
Oh, you could discount in the fact they can go back to Chelsea then, because obviously Chelsea's midfield blend has been a bit of a problem over the course of the entire season. So the idea that he can just be discarded and not be used, I mean, seems fanciful to me. I mean, I was going through the Chelsea squad the other day. They've sold to Tomori and Gerhi, and they're desperate for centre-halves all of a sudden. I mean... You know,
therein lies the problem.
At the weekend, you had a situation where Christensen just decided he didn't fancy going to the cup final. Oh, no, I'm not really ready to play. So they had to play Chalobah last minute and disrupted all their plans. He actually did very well, but that's not the point.
The truth is that all those young players you've just mentioned, in their strongest side, they do not play. And right now we're in an age of empowerment where players are saying, I don't want to sit on benches when there are World Cups.
Totally get that. Totally get that. But they will be able to get in the side next year because Chelsea won't have any defenders, will they?
Yeah, but that's not their young players' problem. The young players are saying,
look, if you look at Chelsea's problem.
Tomori's gone to AC Milan and he's played all season. Tammy Abraham's gone to Roma. He's played all season. He's come on a bundle. Should players...
Looks like great decision-making, doesn't it?
Say again?
Looks like great decision-making, doesn't it?
From the point of view of the players, absolutely, yes. And that's why I'm saying...
But not from the club.
Gallagher, yeah, but listen, if you're Conor Gallagher, you're saying, look, if I stay, I want to play every week. If I don't stay, it doesn't exactly help me. Look at Jesse Lingard at Man United. Promised he'll play, didn't play. Could have gone to West Ham. Could have had a good cup run in the Europa League. Probably could have helped them to win it. Instead, he's kicking his heels. A lot of young players are looking at the situation regarding their parent clubs and the quality they have and saying, if I stay, I'm not going to play. And even if Chelsea want to catch the top two, they've got to bring in experience quality because it's too much pressure to put on the shoulders of young players. It cannot be done.
The good news is, boys, is that we are here all over the summer doing the transfer sort of notebook with Crookie because he's got his little column that goes out on a Friday. But we're also going to be doing the podcast and he's going to be, between the two of you, we'll all be keeping up to date with all the transfers and talking about who could go where. So there's all this speculation still to come over the course of the summer. Thank you very much for your time and your energy today.
We should mention that Wolves drew 1-1 at home to Norwich, just so that Norwich fans don't think we've already forgotten them and cast them into the championship.
Sorry. Wolves won, Norwich won. I didn't see that one either. There's a lot of football going on Sunday afternoon. I didn't watch the Women's Cup. Was that the Women's Cup final? I've got to say, brilliant game. What a fantastic game. 3-2, 49,000 people at Wembley Stadium. Cracking. Tickets were only £2.50 for kids, £20 for adults. Brilliant. Pick and mix was 12 quid. So Wembley still got their money. Don't worry about that. But getting through the door was a lot cheaper. But it was a brilliant atmosphere. And a brilliant, brilliant high-quality game. And if you haven't seen Erin Cuthbert's goal, then please, please check it out. Right, OK. Thank you very much, gentlemen. This week, I'll be at Aston Villa against Burnley on Thursday night live on TalkSport as we bring you the relegation race in full. And then on Sunday, God knows where we'll be. We'll sort that out over the next couple of days. But I tell you what, wherever we are, it will be gripping. So keep listening to TalkSport.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.